We are glad to make all of our JCast Network podcasts free for our listeners. However, they are not free to produce and host. Please consider making a donation to JCast Network to help support our work by visiting jcastnetwork.org/donate. Thanks for your support.
The Jewish Hour can now be heard on jcastnetwork.org, your portal to Jewish broadcasting. It's also on iTunes and on your smartphone using the Stitcher app. Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Finman. We have an awesome show for you today. In this half hour of the show, we're going to be discussing the life of author, internationally known figure, Hermann Woke. Passed away a couple weeks ago at the age of 104. Well acclaimed. We're going to be doing that with Chabad.org's David Margolin. The portion of the week is Bamidbar. We're beginning the book of Numbers. We're probably going to spend more time talking about Shavuos, since next Sunday is the first day of Shavuos, and we won't be here. We'll just be doing music, as is we are wont to do during those times when the show falls out on a Jewish holiday. Stay tuned for wonderful Jewish music next week. We have, speaking of Jewish music, this is the last week of a cappella music. Next week, we'll be back to regular instrumental. We have a wonderful Hasidic story at the end. The Baal Shem Tov's Yahrzeit, the anniversary of his passing, happens to be on the day of Shavuos, and we have a wonderful Baal Shem Tov story. Before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. A 19-year-old Palestinian stabbed two Israelis in Jerusalem before being shot and killed by Israeli police. The two are listed in serious and moderate condition, respectively. Israeli police arrested a Palestinian for setting dozens of fires last week throughout central Israel and Jerusalem. One fire destroyed the village of Modi'in. The IDF sealed an attack tunnel from Lebanon. The Hezbollah-made tunnel was discovered last January and was sealed then. It has now been utterly destroyed. The Latvian parliament elected Egils Levits, a Jewish attorney, president. Like Israel, the main power in Latvia is the prime minister. More than 1,200 Yemenite antelope chauffeurs were stolen from a warehouse in Brooklyn. Police are looking for the thief. What are you going to do with 1,200 chauffeurs? Don't know. Computer manufacturer, listen to this one, all you BDSers. Computer manufacturer Hewlett-Packard signed a deal to use Israeli cybersecurity technology on its new computers. Yes, they'll be safe. And in some lighter news throughout the world, Israel's Givat Winery scored 95 and took gold medal at the prestigious Decanter World Wine Awards in London for its Gafna Cabernet Sauvignon. The wine is available online for $75 a bottle. The Conference of European Rabbis requested that Unicode Consortium, the creator of emojis, to make new emojis that show men in kippahs and women in head coverings, saying that the Jewish religion should not be left behind. It should be brought into the center of public discourse and made equal among other religions. Emojis exist that depict the Christian, Muslim, and Hindu religions. And finally, researchers at Hebrew University made beer from yeast taken from 5,000-year-old bottles. The brew, that sounds kind of strange, but the brew, resembling a pale ale, was said to have a remarkable taste, as opposed to, I should say, unremarkable, but okay, and that's the news.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program, When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in a growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000, or visit them on the web at specshoward.edu. Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. You may recall, I don't know, maybe half a dozen, maybe 8 years ago, and some years before that, there was a contingent of girls that were listening to the Jewish Hour in Chicago. And every once in a while, they would say, "This is the girls from Chicago, and we want to hear such and such a song being played." So every once in a while, they've all moved out of Chicago, and they're all gone their ways because they were high school girls at the time. Every once in a while, I get a request from one of the four, we can call them the former girls of Chicago. So this is Yishai Riboy, Israeli singing sensation. The song is Halev Shali, My Heart, and it's dedicated to the girls formerly of Chicago.
הלב שלי נקרא לשניים מה שלא ראתה שפחה למים כמו סופה מן הים עולה כמו טופה של מרים פועם אין תרופה בעולם הלב שלי מרים ידיים כבר מועד לא עומד על הרגליים שבר כלי שאין בו כבר מה והשמיים הם בלי חומה איך אעבור בתוך הים ביבשה ורק אתה יכול להפוך מספדי למחול לזכך את החול לרקח בי הכל ורק אתה מבין איך לגשת ללב שלי משכך כל כאב שבי מרפא את הלב הלב שלי נקרא לשניים חציו השם וחציו לשם שמיים כמו סופה מן הים עולה כמו טופה של מרים פועם ואין תרופה בעולם ללב ורק אתה יכול להפוך מספדי למחול לזכך את החול לרקח בי הכל ורק אתה מבין איך לגשת ללב שלי משכך כל כאב שבי מרפא את יש אוצר שמציק לצון ואין ציר שיצעק לצור רק אני מול ים שלם ולב שבור ורק אתה יכול להפוך מספדי למחול לזכך את החול לרקח בי הכל ורק אתה מבין איך לגשת ללב שלי משכך כל כאב שבי מרפא את הלב ורק אתה יכול להפוך מספדי למחול לזכך את החול לקדש בי הכל ורק אתה מבין איך לגשת
We all know there's an opiate epidemic, but Advanced Rapid Detox has a solution for people addicted to pain pills, heroin, and dependent on Suboxone and methadone. Advanced Rapid Detox performs detox under sedation in the hospital. Patients sleep through withdrawals and wake up without cravings. Dr. Julia Aronoff and the staff at Advanced Rapid Detox help people restore their lives and the lives of their families. Addiction affects everyone, even in the Jewish community, and Advanced Rapid Detox is there to help. Call 800-603-1813. That's 800-603-1813, or visit them online at www.advancedrapiddetox.com. Hey, Schulman, here you're listening to The Jewish Hour. We want to welcome to the family of sponsors, Advanced Rapid Detox. Hopefully you know their, you don't need their services, but if you know somebody who does, you'll definitely want to give Dr. Aronoff a call and take care of that problem. And let's hopefully we can get control of this problem. We are on the line with Rabbi David Margolin, who is the associate editor of Chabad.org. We're going to be talking today about the life of author, I guess you could say, extraordinaire, Herman Wolk. How are you today, David?
Thank God I'm doing well, Rabbi Thinman. Thank you so much for having me on.
It is indeed my pleasure. Okay, now, I think most people have heard of Herman Wolk. I mean, some of his stuff is like all over the world. The Kane Mutiny, Marjorie Morningside, This Is My God, etc. So where do we begin talking about this person? It's like very, it's like when I say his life began before World War I and he ended with an iPhone. So where do we begin talking about Herman Wolk?
That's a very good question. His life definitely spanned the bulk of the 20th century and well into the 21st century, and he was somebody who a veteran of World War II. He was in the Navy, which as you mentioned, that was a theme that he hit on a number of times in his books in the Kane Mutiny, and it ended in this modern era, and he was still writing until I believe he was still writing even up until very, very recently, and his most recent book was published at the age of 100. But even in a bigger way, he wasn't just alive, but he was, I know he was Skyping, and he was using Skype to study Talmud with people once he was already kind of a little bit more a little weaker and couldn't come to the synagogue. So it's definitely a big subject. I think that the main thing that looking at Herman Wolk's life, you have to see that this was a person who was who really lived what he believed and felt that he had a responsibility for, he was given a gift. He had this ability to write, and he was also a practicing Jew, and it's one of his closest friends over the last 30, 40 years was his rabbi, the rabbi of Chabad of Palm Springs, Rabbi Yonason Denebaim. And Rabbi Denebaim told me that, and I wrote this in the article, but we spoke about this at length when I was writing about Herman Wolk. He told me that Herman Wolk's Torah study, his Jewish practice, that's who he was. He was a gifted storyteller through his words, but that was ancillary to who he was as a Jew. And his medium was the writing. So I think that's very important when we talk about Herman Wolk, is to kind of step back and say, wow, this was a practicing Jew who lived it, really had very strong feelings for his own personal practice, but also kind of the bigger questions, the fate of Judaism in the modern world, kind of where are we heading? And he used kind of all of his immense capabilities in order to further that along.
Okay. If you're just joining us, our guest today is David Margolin from Chabad.org. We're talking about the life of Herman Wolk, who recently passed away at the age of 104. So, according to your research, you wrote a very good article, which does appear on Chabad.org, if anybody would like to, and I suggest that people do read it. It is one of the longest obituaries I have ever seen of anybody, to tell you the truth, and it took me about 10 minutes to read the whole thing. Tell us about his influences in growing up that carried him throughout his life, David.
So Wolk was born in the Bronx. His parents. His mother was certainly from Russia. I can't remember at this moment whether his father was American-born or I think he was also an immigrant. So he had a very kind of typical American Jewish upbringing of that era. You know, they were Orthodox. They went to synagogue. I think both of his parents came from kind of the region of Minsk, and therefore they davened, they prayed at the Minsker Shul in the Bronx. And he had a very typical upbringing in that way. One of his biggest influences, and he writes about this and he speaks about it very often, was his grandfather, Mendel Leib Levin. And his grandfather was a Lubavitcher Chassid who had actually studied in Volozhin, but was in a this large Lithuanian yeshiva, but was extremely attached to his Lubavitch roots, and he was a Lubavitcher Chassid. And his grandfather was a rabbi in Minsk, and he came to America shortly after Wolk's bar mitzvah, which would be, I guess, around 1928. And he arrived here, and Wolk actually spoke about it a number of times. He dedicated "This Is My God" to his grandfather, and he says how when his grandfather came, it just brought this whole new element to his life, that he had been living a Jewish life, you know, until then. He had a bar mitzvah, and he said, I did really well at my bar mitzvah. But when his grandfather came, his grandfather arrived on a Shabbat. The boat actually arrived in the harbor on Shabbat, and the grandfather refused to get off the boat because he's not disembarking, because that would break Shabbat. So they didn't even know what to do with him. The captain, and he ended up coming off on Sunday. So that's kind of like this introduction to who his grandfather was. But then he said, he spoke about this. There's a speech in Minnesota that he gave, and he says how his grandfather came and he brought this whole different attitude into his life. And he never said it, he acted it. And everything that he said was through his action. And what he communicated was that there's nothing more important than being a Jew, and that's the way he lived. And kind of the way Wolk presented it was that his grandfather's presence showed to him a person who's totally dedicated to who he was. And something that Wolk, you know, reflecting on it afterwards, was kind of, you know, I kind of took it for granted, and yet my grandfather was this person who was completely dedicated to his Judaism, to his spiritual life, and so that's one very, very fundamental element. Another story is the way he went off to war.
Oh yeah, so I was going to ask you about that. I was going to ask you about that.
Right. This is a theme. I mean, his first book was Aurora Dawn, which was about the war, and obviously the Caine Mutiny is very much it's a war novel and plays off. He was Wolk was on the stationed on the USS Zane, and the boat in the ship in his book is the USS Caine. So there's a lot of he obviously used his experiences very much. But as he was preparing to go out, he enlisted after Pearl Harbor. He was already successful by that time. He was a gag writer writing for the radio, Fred Allen. He enlisted after Pearl Harbor. And he went to midshipman school. And he's already, he's graduated. And I think he was heading off to Annapolis. And his mother, who had been recently widowed, took him to see the sixth Rebbe, Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Schneerson, who by that time was in Brooklyn. And so they took the subway from the Bronx all the way down to Brooklyn, and they came in for this private audience. And he describes it really quite beautifully about how, you know, the whole scene really made an impression. The sixth Rebbe was very ill by that time, had a difficult time speaking, but that he was a very kind of majestic person. I think he wrote in The Will to Live On, is one of Wolk's later books on Judaism in particular. He says how the Rebbe was a gentle personage of imposing presence, and he received them with grace, and they spoke in Yiddish, and Rabbi Dannenbaum told me that Wolk would often repeat how the Rebbe had told him, the sixth Rebbe had told him, you know, when a person goes off to war, there's a lot of leniencies that they can accept upon themselves. You know, like there's going to be things in terms of Jewish observance that are going to be difficult for you to do. And that's understandable. But you should really be careful with tefillin. You should take them with you and make sure to wear them every single day. And Wolk did that. He took his tefillin with him to war. And the Rebbe also gave him a dime, with his blessing. And Wolk took that dime with him to war as well and writes how he couldn't even explain at the time why he kept it, but he had it on him at all times. And the tefillin ended up playing this really big role, and the way he writes it, the dime did as well. The tefillin, what happened was he was on the Zain, and then he was transferred to the Southard, and this is right after the war, about a month after. It was September 1945, and they're on this ship, the Southard, and they're hit by a typhoon. I believe it was in Okinawa Harbor. There was a lot of ships that were taken down that night. They had a horrible night. And in the morning, miraculously, nobody perished on their boat. Everyone survived, and they really felt that this was a miracle because it wasn't just a one hit. It was hours and hours of this typhoon, and they were just stuck. They were, I think, grinding up against a coral reef. It was really a terrible night. So in the morning, they're standing there on shore, and he was the executive officer. Wolk was the executive officer on the ship, and his men all start being very reverential to him, and that was weird because he had been the bad cop on the ship. So the captain had been the good cop, and everyone liked him, and Wolk, being the exec, was the bad cop, and he was the enforcer, and they really didn't like him. And yet, all of a sudden, they're all very reverential. And he turned to his chief petty officer and he says, "What's going on? Why is everyone acting this way?" And they said, "You saved our ship." He said, "What do you mean I saved our ship?" He goes, "Well, they all say that Lieutenant Wolk's black boxes saved the ship." And Wolk had been put. Yes, his tefillin. He would wear them every single morning on the bridge, and everyone saw that. And here they experienced this, and they really felt that it was, the black boxes, the tefillin that had really saved them. So that was, I think, something which was. So these are kind of episodes that really played a very deep role in forming who Wolk was later on, in his life and in his career.
Okay. Our guest today is David Margolin he's the associate editor of Chabad.org. We're talking about the life of Hermann Wolk. Okay, so very shortly after World War II, Wolk hit it big with first Marjorie Morningstar and then the Kane Mutiny. And Kane Mutiny went on to becoming a film and made tremendous success from it. Yet, His infrastructure was always the same. He was still the same person. He was still, as you said, this religious Jew who happened to write books. Let's talk about the effect that didn't happen because of his fame.
So I think it's important to note that he was, he was born and raised Orthodox, and he, very traditional. He did have a short spell, which he writes about, around college. He went to Columbia, and around that time, he had a few short years where he did step away from religious observance, but he very quickly kind of found his way back, and that was something that remained with him for the rest of his life, and I would say really strengthened as it went along. He writes, it was actually, I don't want to correct you, but the Kane Mutiny came first. That was his third book, and Marjorie Morningstar, I believe, was the immediate follow-up a few years later. But the Kane Mutiny won the Pulitzer. It was on Broadway. The movie starred Humphrey Bogart. So that was, that was pretty huge. And he writes in This Is My God, which came out in 1959, I believe. So This Is My God was his first book on Judaism in particular, and we can talk about that, in a few minutes. But he writes there about This Is My God. He writes about working on Broadway and Shabbat approaching. And, you know, there's a lot of stress. There's a lot of pressure. There's a lot of people who want a lot of things from you. And this is his work. This is his baby. And he was there. He was on hand. But he would disappear. Shabbat is coming. He's gone. And he wrote, he would be leaving the gloomy theater, the littered coffee cups, the jumbled, scarred-up scripts, the haggard actors, the shouting stagehands, the bedeviled director, the knuckle-gnawing producer, and the dense tobacco smoke and backstage dust for home. And when he would get home, what would he find? A splendid dinner, a table graced with flowers, and, of course, the symbols of Shabbat, the burning candles, the twisted loaves, the challah, the stuffed fish, the gefilte fish, and his grandfather's silver goblet, his becher, brimming with wine. So these were things that he lived with this, and it seems that very early on, he didn't see his Jewish observance as something that was, you know, stopping him from success, but something that was actually aiding his success, and probably even more was probably the core of who, because that's who he was, and that's kind of how it was reflected in his work.
Okay, I remember, I came to Lubavitch in 1976, and I remember for Brengen's when Herman Wouk would come up, and the first time that he was actually up there, I asked somebody, who's that guy? And then someone looked at me like, oh, that's Herman Wouk. Oh, Herman Wouk, okay. But it seems that he had come very often. What influence did the seventh Lubavitch Rebbe, the Rebbe, have on Wouk? And tell us about their interactions a little bit, David Margolin.
So so they had a very deep, long relationship. It began, I know, you know, there was, of course, the connection that we spoke about with the seventh Rebbe's father-in-law. And that continued kind of in that way. I know that Wouk came with his mother at least on one occasion for a private audience to the Rebbe, but he himself came very often. And it seems that the relationship strengthened, I guess, as Wouk himself began to see his, what, you know, he spoke often about how his big concern is the biggest concern of his life was the survival of the Jewish people. And he saw in the Rebbe, in the Rebbe's movement, in the Rebbe's ideas, kind of the key to survival, how instead of us being, you know, the Jewish, kind of the Jewish, broader Jewish community being really down on the future, he saw this positivity, and he saw that within that positivity, within that kind of looking at things glass half full, that's where the answer lay. And there's a beautiful quote that the Rebbe told him. He was in a private audience with the Rebbe, and he was sharing these concerns that so many, you know, I write about in the article. I mentioned there was this big Look magazine cover story. Look magazine doesn't exist today, but at that point it had 7.4 million. It was distributing 7.4 million magazines around the country. And they, you know, the vanishing American Jew. I think that was in the 60s. So this was, you know, this was a very big concern. And the Rebbe in the private audience, Wouk shares, you know, like, this is what's going on. How do we look at this in any other way? And the Rebbe negated that. And the Rebbe said, the American Jewish community is wonderful. While you cannot tell them to do anything, you can teach them to do everything. And I think that's really the foundation in terms of their long relationship, because from there was a lot that Wouk, you know, I think his views changed on it. Instead of being on the defensive, it became kind of, how are we going to, you know, what more can we do to be on the offense? How can we attract more people? How can we engage more people, you know, have people engage with their own Jewish identity? So that was something, and the Rebbe definitely saw in Herman Wouk his dedication, Wouk's dedication, and his own strength, and always encouraged him further. Wouk came very famously in 1972. He came to the Rebbe bearing personal greetings from President Nixon. That was on the occasion of the Rebbe's 70th birthday. And they had a private audience at that time as well. And as I remember, Yitzhak Rabin was the ambassador, was the Israeli ambassador to the United States at the time, and he actually had to was sitting in the antechamber. He was waiting his turn because I think Woke had a flight to catch, and so they kind of squeezed the Woke in before the ambassador. And he stayed, Rabin. But the Rebbe said and then there's another, you know, there's in 1975 he came, and there was many other private interactions, but these are just some of the kind of the ones that are that we really, you know, there's a on tape, and you see Woke in 1975 he came for the anniversary of the Rebbe's assuming leadership and the yard site of his father-in-law Yud Shvat, that's in the winter, and you see Woke kind of really dancing and clapping and really participating in the Farbringen, in the gathering. And then he comes to the Rebbe and he tells him how during this interlude, during the Farbringen, there's a lot of singing around. And he walks up to the Rebbe very respectfully and he says, they just translated my book, This Is My God, into Hebrew. And the Rebbe was very interested And then towards the end of this conversation, the Rebbe said, "But don't make sure you don't forget about, you know, the Jews in America. The Jews in America need you as well." And you know, kind of this interesting interaction. And there's kind of one more on this exact point in terms of the Rebbe encouraging him and seeing within him these special capabilities. There was this exchange in the 80s. It was 1985, and Woke writes to the Rebbe, "It remains for me to thank you for your two kind words about my modest acts in the field of Jewish education and to welcome your blessings with the profoundest gratitude." And, you know, Woke is writing about his, you know, very modest acts, and the Rebbe didn't, you know, the Rebbe wouldn't accept that. The Rebbe said, I must challenge this self-assessment, the Rebbe replied, on the grounds that the record speaks for itself. Moreover, in wide segments of Jewry, especially among American Jews, the impact of your modest acts strikes deeper and wider than similar acts of a rabbi or rebbe, myself included, could attain for obvious reasons. For the sake of a mutual consensus, I am prepared to accept your claim of very modest acts in a relative sense in terms of your potential and future acts, which will dwarf your past accomplishments by comparison." So I think that's a kind of a very beautiful way of, you know, seeing the relationship where this isn't, you know, it's not really two people flattering each other. It's Woke very much learning from the Rebbe and on how to grow and impact and do more. And the Rebbe says, you know, don't be modest either. You have these great capabilities, and you need to continue.
Okay. I have one more question. Our segment is wrapping up over here. You mentioned just in passing that Hermann Woke brought birthday wishes from then-President Nixon to the Rebbe in honor of the Rebbe's 70th birthday. How did that transpire that he, Woke, became Nixon's messenger?
So the truth is, I'm not totally sure. Woke was living in Washington at the time for many years. He lived in Georgetown. He also, one of his novels, Inside Outside, is kind of about a Jewish staffer in the Nixon White House. I can't remember whether, I don't believe he ever worked in the actual White House. I guess it was kind of this honorary guest, but I'm not totally sure how, you know, that actually transpired. Why Woke, you know, in terms of Nixon, but there is a picture and you know, Woke also had his own relationship. So I'm sure that played a part. He wasn't just coming kind of from on high. He was somebody who was coming on his own. That year, 1972, Woke was here. Woke was in, he flew to Minnesota and spoke at a gathering marking the Rebbe's birthday as well, and flew to Los Angeles. And this was all within a period of 3 days. So, I mean, I don't remember, 3 days, a few days, just right around the Rebbe's birthday. And so he was really kind of hopping around the country. And so I guess it kind of fit the personality.
Okay. All right, it's going to wrap it up. Our guest today was David Margolin. He's the associate editor of Chabad.org. He wrote quite an extensive obituary detailing the life of famous author Herman Wouk. It is available. You can see it at Chabad.org, and on their search line, type in, I guess, W-O-U-K would probably get you the quickest way. And we thank you so much, David, and taking some time and sharing with us.
Thank you very, very much, Rabbi Finman.
Okay, take care. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Want assurance of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale. Herschel Finman here. You are listening to The Jewish Hour. Let's listen to some music. Enough of me. This coming up is Zonville Weinberger, and the words that he's singing in English translation would be, "Judge everyone favorably."
Heva don don skalu dom le kazchis. Heva don 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 skalu ubu dom skalu dom. Skalu ubu dom le kazchis. Heva don 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 skalu dom dom. Heva don skalu dom le kazchis. Heva don 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 skalu ubu dom skalu dom. Oy le
Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800. Herschel Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. We played a song earlier, which was done by recording artist Yishai Rebo. This song is actually originally an Yishai Rebo song. It's called Nafshi Sorug, My Soul Thirsts for God. And it's done in an a cappella style by Simcha Lerner, and it's just for you.
Nafshi, nafshi, chamda, chamda b'tzeh. Oh, Yeladas, oh, Yeladas, oh, Yeladas, Kolos, oh, Yedecho. Nafshi, nafshi, chomdo, chomdo, betzel, Yedecho.
We all know there's an opiate epidemic, but Advanced Rapid Detox has a solution for people addicted to pain pills, heroin, and dependent on Suboxone and Methadone. Advanced Rapid Detox performs detox under sedation in the hospital. Patients sleep through withdrawals and wake up without cravings. Dr. Julia Aronoff and the staff at Advanced Rapid Detox help people restore their lives and the lives of their families. Addiction affects everyone, even in the Jewish community, and Advanced Rapid Detox is there to help. Call 800-603-1813. That's 800-603-1813. Or visit them online at www.advancedrapiddetox.com. Herschel Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. This week is the portion of Bamidbar. It is the beginning of the book of Numbers. This portion is always read the week before the holiday of Shavuos. The holiday of Shavuos is next week, starting Saturday night. There's no break. We go straight from Shabbos right into Saturday, into Shavuos, into Sunday, and then Monday also. Just talk briefly, what are the customs? Well, what you have to do, like every holiday has a have to do, what you have to do on Shavuos is nothing. There are no have to's. People have customs. They eat dairy on Sunday morning because the Jews realized that their pans and pots were not kosher, and the only thing they had to eat on that Sunday morning was some dairy stuff. People stay up all night and learn until dawn because the Jews went to sleep and they didn't have an opportunity to learn then, so we learn in their place now. It is customary to bring flowers into the home in the synagogue because according to one of the commentaries, Mount Sinai, which is a desert mountain, was blooming with wonderful flowers. But other than that, there really isn't anything else to do. It's just a yontif. Now, we can say just. And usually when someone says, oh, it's just, there's a whole lot more than just. The holiday of Shavuos commemorates the giving of the Torah to the Jewish people. If there was no Shavuos, there would be no Jewish people. There would be no Judaism. There would be nothing. So in this manner, we would say that Shavuos, which is only just one day in Israel, 2 days outside of Israel, which doesn't have any major unique customs or mandatory obligations like blowing a shofar, eating a matzah, sitting in a sukkah, it's those type of things. It is the focal point of Judaism. And that is the reason why it is that there is no specific custom. Because what happened on the holiday of Shavuos, the Almighty revealed his essence to the world. And it describes in all the various commentaries about what was to happen in the aftermath, etc. The point being, though, is with the revelation, which is referred to in English as the Pentecost, there is now an established relationship between God and the world. And what type of an established relationship was it? It wasn't tertiary, superficial connection, divine thing. No, it was God's essence and our essence. And essence doesn't need any trappings. The holiday is preceded this year by Shabbos. Generally, it says that we're not allowed to prepare anything on the Sabbath for after the Sabbath. It's one of the prohibitions. Sabbath is for itself. There's no creative thing there. But this year, we're going to have to say that since the day before Shavuos, which Erev Shavuos, as it's called, is a day when we prepare for the holiday. So there's going to be some preparation there for also on this next coming Shabbos. How so? You can't make your blintzes or your cheesecake on Shabbos. It has to be done all beforehand. But rather, it's the state of mind that a person puts themselves into. Generally, the idea of Shabbos, the word Shabbos comes from the word, and is related to the word to return, like to dwell. The word Shav means to sit, to dwell. And it's a time when things are going back and reassuming their status quo. And in this instance, we're talking about, say, that after the 6 days of creation, God created rest. What that meant was that everything now can assume its lowest energy connection with God, meaning an unequivocal connection with God. And so if a person's spending the entire day before the holiday, with this in mind, that they're going to be relating to, they're preparing themselves to make this essential bond with the Almighty again. And it's not just a symbol, but rather the Shulchan Aruch HaKadosh wrote that every holiday is the holiday because the same godly revelation is revealed on that day. Only it's a much higher revelation because in this instance we're over 3,300 years more of it. So every Shavuos and the anniversary of every holiday of Shavuos, there's been a greater revelation. We are now 3,300 levels higher than when they got the Torah 3,300 years ago. And so we prepare for this by putting ourselves in that frame of mind, understanding that the Almighty wants a relationship with us even more than we want a relationship with the Almighty. We're going to take a quick commercial break. We've got a wonderful Baal Shem Tov story coming up. Don't go away. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
Hi, this is Specs Howard. The Specs Howard School of Media Arts is proud to have been a sponsor of The Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding comes from its sponsors, listeners like you help keep The Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to The Jewish Hour, 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. That's 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. Your help is greatly appreciated. Thank you very much.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Want to get in touch with me? Easiest way? Go to my website, rabbifinman.com. You'll find a way to get in touch with me. Duh, that's why I'm telling you about it. You'll also find archived editions of the radio show on the radio tab. It's on the left-hand side. It says the word radio. If you click on that, then you get the last 2 years or so of the radio show. And you can listen to your heart's content when you want. It's up there. Doesn't come down until the next show pushes off the last show. There's also archived editions of the E-Parsha, the U-Parsha, other ways that I convey Judaism to you in a hopefully entertaining and educational way. And there's also the very important donations page. Today is June 2nd, and the Piper needs to get paid. We're almost done with March. I could say maybe one more week and we'll be done with March, but right now we need your help. Please go to rabbifinman.com. Go to the donations page. It's all very safe, secure. It's very easy to do. It'll take 3 minutes, and if you have PayPal, it'll take 45 seconds because you can do it straight from your PayPal to the show's PayPal, and you can even set it up such that you give monthly, and you don't even have to do it. You don't have to think about it, but I'll think about it, and I'll acknowledge it every month when you give that donation. So go to rabbifinman.com. Do it today. Do it before the holiday of Shavuos. Make the donation. And you'll be glad you did, because the Jewish Hour now, 24 years on air, has only been here because of people like you and me doing this every week for month to month to month to month. So make my life easier. Make my Shavuos easier, because like I said, I'm not going to be here next week. But things happening at Jewish Ferndale, mark on your calendar. First of all, today. It's already going on now. At Jewish Ferndale, we're doing the community garden. If you like to play in the schmutz, come on down. We'll be here for a couple more hours at 1725 Pinecrest. The community garden is going to be awesome this year, folks. Really unbelievable what's going to be. Come help and participate and see the fruits of your labor grow. A couple weeks from now, on the 23rd, is our big garden day. We'll have Robert Wittenberg. His brother should have a complete recovery. We'll have all kinds of exhibits and all kinds of crafts and things, fun for the kids, all yada yada, food, of course, everything. It's our big spring day. By that time, the garden will be up and growing, and you can come. The things have already grown. We'll allow people to harvest stuff. We've got oregano more than we know what to do with. So come by. Mark your calendar. That's free and open to the public on June the 23rd. Again, the address is 1725 Pinecrest Drive in Ferndale, Michigan, just south of 9 Mile. And park in one of the lots around the building. There's a shoe store that went out of business and a cleaner's that went out of business. And then there's Renaissance Vineyard, which is across the street. All these have parking because we're expecting a crowd. So it once happened on one Shabbos that the Baal Shem Tov was having a meal on the Friday night. And in the middle of the meal, he just laughed. And some time went by, and he laughed again. And a third time, he laughed again. Now, this was unusual for him to just spontaneously, no one told a joke. So after the Sabbath, one of his students said, Rebbe, why did you laugh three times during the Friday night meal? And he said, let's go find out. And he and got his whole disciples. They piled into the coach, and the wagon driver, Alexei or Ivan, whatever his name was, whichever one I think was Ivan, was told, giddy up. And as was wont to do, it was already late at night, and they're going, and Ivan fell asleep, and the horses took off. And in a very short time before dawn, they reached the city of Apta, which is located many miles east of Grosse Pointe Farms. They came into the synagogue there, and the Baal Shem Tov davened Shachris there. And after Shachris, he said, could you bring me, Chaim, the bookbinder, please? So word goes out. The Baal Shem Tov wants to see Chaim, the bookbinder. Chaim comes running. And he says, Rebbe, what can I do for you? He says, tell me what you did Friday night. So he started to cry. Did I do something wrong? He said, no, you're not in trouble. Don't worry. It's not like you went to the principal's office. Translation is my own. And he said, Rebbe, it's like this. I've been a bookbinder my whole life, and I've always made Shabbos my priority. And what I would do is I would go shopping on Friday morning. I never bound a book on Friday. I'd go shopping, get all the things that were necessary, and then by noon, I would go to the mikveh, go to the bathhouse, and get into my Shabbos finery, regardless of what time Shabbos was, and I would go to the synagogue, I would review the portion, I would say Shir Shirim, do other things, get ready for the Shabbos, and then come home Friday night, and everything was already done. His wife put up with this. My wife, I don't think, would. So, but anyway, this last week, I'm getting old. And every week it's less and less and less, but I'm sticking to my values that it says make your Shabbos like a weekday rather than borrow or worse than that, charity. So this Shabbos, I had nothing, but I told my wife the same thing. I'm going to do my regular routine, but do not borrow from anybody. When I came home, the house was lit. There was food on the table. I thought my wife maybe took charity. And I asked her, where'd all the money come from? And she said, I had nothing to do. So I cleaned the house and I found an old sweater with some silver buttons. And I took the buttons and I sold them. And we have, thank God, enough money to live for quite a while. And I bought everything, no expenses spared. And so the man got up and danced. And they danced three times. And every time they danced, the Baal Shem Tov laughed because the angels on high were celebrating with that couple. And the Baal Shem Tov gave them a blessing that they should have a child in their old age. They were well on in age. And the Yisrael Maggid of Kuznets was their child. That's going to do it for us. We thank you so much for tuning in. We hope it had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope you had a chance to educate you a bit. We hope you have a great week. Have a wonderful Shavuos. We'll see you in 2 weeks. Take care. Bye.